what it's about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And welcome to a Tuesday night. It is Nicole Sandler here with you on Air America Radio, and we've got a really, really special show planned for you tonight. So I thank you for tuning in, especially tonight. Now, before we get started, let me throw this out to you. If you have any friends who have adoption in their lives, or if you have any know people who perhaps are wanting a child, but for whatever reason, haven't been able to have one, let me suggest you call them and invite them to come listen as well. Because, yes, tonight's show is all about adoption. Now, November is National Adoption Month, so I try to do at least one program dealing with the topic every year around this time. But today is, it's an extra special day for me. Actually, there's 2 days, yesterday and today. It was 9 years ago yesterday that I was in a courthouse in a little village in the country of Kazakhstan, and a judge who couldn't understand a word I was saying, I had to convince that he should grant me the privilege of adopting one of his country's children, a little girl who was known then as Maygul, who had lived most of her 18 months in an orphanage in the tiny village of Karakastak. And, I must have said something right, because he did grant me the adoption. That was 9 years ago yesterday. And 9 years ago today, I went to the orphanage for the final time, brought some clothes, dressed my daughter, and took her out of there. And she's been with me forever, ever since. So today is the day we referred to as our Forever Day. And there's a lot more to it than that, and we'll get to that throughout the course of the show today. Now, I started the process of adopting her about 18 months earlier. And what's weird is when I went back through my journal and read the day that I started looking, like I had this epiphany that what am I waiting for, was probably right around when she was born. Some things I think happen for a reason. Well, I had always said that if by the time I was 40, I hadn't met the man I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, that I would do it, you know, have a child myself. I always knew I wanted to be a mother, but I had always been very career driven. And back 10, 15 years ago, I was living in Los Angeles, you know, working in radio, working mornings, which is not very conducive to a social life, you know. I had a high powered career, and 18 months before now, I finally one day it was about 6 months before my 40th birthday, and I said, what am I waiting for? I had a great job. I owned a home. I was happy. Things were good. I said, what am I waiting for? And I immediately went on the computer and started researching Russian adoption. As a single woman, I thought, it's not very easy for a single woman of about 40 years old, especially, to adopt a child domestically, a healthy infant anyway. And so my heritage was Russian and Romanian, and I just immediately thought, I'm going to adopt a baby girl from Russia. So, you know, sometimes things pop into your head, and I never looked back. And I started the researching agencies and, you know, looking into everything that was involved. And for the next 18 months, it was a mountain of paperwork and a lot of waiting and a lot of heartache. And I also met some very good friends. Yeah. See, there were these listservs. It was before the days of Facebook and even, you know, different groups, Yahoo groups and such. But there were these two Eastern European adoption groups that were online, and they had listservs, like mailing lists. And I got on those. When I finally decided on an agency, I kept up on these lists. And I had noticed other people who were posting who were using the same agency I was. And I wound up sending out emails to these people. And eventually, we formed our own little list. We were all started the adoption process around the same time. And I want to say there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 families. And this was over 10 years ago. Well, let's fast forward to today. We still have our little list going. Some of these families I've met once. Some of them I've never met at all. But I'll tell you, I count them among my closest friends in the world because they went through the whole process of, you know, me getting my child, them getting their children. We did it all together. And as you'll find over the course of the next couple of hours, there was a lot of heartache involved. There was a lot of pain. There were a lot of tears. There was a lot of laughter and a lot of joy and a lot of happiness too. So we're going to cover all of those bases with, again, some of my closest friends in the world, most of whom I've met once. I think, we'll get there. Before we get there, I'm going to back up one more second. You might remember Friday night I mentioned that I was going to see Jackson Browne on Saturday, and I did. Went to see an amazing concert from Jackson Browne in Miami Saturday night. And went backstage to see him after the show. And the first thing he said to me after hello was, "How's your daughter?" Yeah, see, Jackson sent a lovely gift when I adopted Allison. And about 5 years ago, when I was living in Boston, I took Allison to see him. And I've got a wonderful picture of the two of them together. And so Jackson right away asked about Allison. And I told him she's doing great and left her at home so I could have a nice night out with the boyfriend. And he said, "Did I ever introduce you to my friend Linda?" And I said, "I don't think so." And he said, "Linda Roback adopted her daughter from Romania. And she's really, really involved in all the problems and trying to do away with the problems in international adoptions." He said, "You need to talk to her." And sure enough, he emailed me her info Sunday morning, and I got in touch with Linda, and we spent a lot of time on the phone, and I thought, you know what? Linda needs to join in this show, too. So before we get to my friends, my focus family, and I'll explain why that's the name of it in a little while, we're going to talk to Linda Roback. So why don't we do this? We'll take a break now, come back and talk to Linda Roback about, she'll give us some of the statistics, some of the information on inter-country adoption. And why, you know, countries that have a hard time caring for these children are not thrilled with people from other countries coming in to try to adopt their children and giving them a better lives. And what we can do to try to ease that situation. All right. So stick around. It is our special adoption program tonight on Air America Radio. I'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Conceived by another, I will care for you. Life is your sister and love is your brother, and I am your father too.
That is Keb Mo with a wonderful song about adoption called I Am Your Mother Too. Linda Roback joins us now. Linda is a new friend who I just met through Jackson Browne, of all people, who said we needed to talk because Jackson knew I adopted my daughter from Kazakhstan and Linda adopted her daughter from Romania. And we spoke for the first time on Sunday. So, Linda, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
Well, it's my pleasure. Now, in addition to being an adoptive parent, you've taken it a step further where you've become a real advocate for kids who are, well, in this case, really stuck in other countries. Because tell us, right around the time you adopted your daughter, Romania totally shut down to international adoption, right?
Exactly. I brought home my daughter from Romania on June 4th of 2001, and on June 17th, Romania issued a ban on intercountry adoptions. It lasted until October, when former Ambassador Michael Guest was able to negotiate a lifting of the ban, and the Romanian government issued what's called an emergency ordinance, which allowed the adoptions in process to proceed, but also for new adoptions to be filed. And that lasted until February of 2004. At that time, Romania was getting ready to join the European Union, and they had a person from the European Parliament that's known as a rapporteur, which essentially, for layman translation, means they're like a coach to prepare the country to make sure they're ready to join the European Union. It so turned out that this particular individual, Baroness Nicholson, was adamantly opposed to intercountry adoption. We believe it was due to her own personal experience where she didn't adopt a child, but had actually brought home a child from Iraq that had been severely burned and left an orphan. And the child obviously was a Muslim, and Muslims do not believe in adoption unless it's by biological relatives. And Baroness Nicholson had thought that she would be able to find an adoptive family for this child who was undergoing medical treatment in the UK. And when that didn't prove possible at all, essentially she was, for lack of a better description, was stuck with this child. So she went on to raise £8 million for a foundation in his name to pay for his medical expenses and supposedly to do outreach to other children affected by the war in Iraq. And that began a not very pleasant story between the two of them. And since then, there have been innumerable issues. A few years ago, he went to the UK press and said he was jobless and homeless, and he's definitely physically scarred, especially his face. And so, consequently, there's not any love lost between the two of them.
Right, and so this experience colored her whole opinion of intercountry adoption, and so therefore she's doing everything in her power to stop them?
Exactly. Basically, he went to the press, and one of the more infamous quotes that both of them have used is he said, you took me away from my culture and my language, etc. And so now, of course, she parrots the same words. Children who are adopted intercountry lose their culture, lose their language, and consequently, all parentless children should remain in country. So she then went on to accuse adoptive parents, but in particular American adoptive parents, of being child traffickers, that we were only interested in adopting children to sell their organs, that we sexually abused these children.
And this is a theme in a lot of Eastern European countries where people actually believe that stuff because obviously they're told that by people like this woman.
Exactly. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's true. You can buy the press in many of these countries. You can buy a journalist's pen, if you will, to write whatever story you want. I have no idea how much it costs because we've never gone so low. Mm-hmm. However, you know, once something like that is repeated often enough in a foreign country, there are many educated people who actually believe that as truth. And we see it even here in the United States and most recently in our last, you know, presidential campaign. If you repeat something often enough publicly, people believe that as truth.
Right.
So there are many people throughout Europe, but in particular Romania, Bulgaria, some of the countries that are more impoverished than others who do believe that these children are adopted and then their organs are sold. Because quite frankly, organ selling is something that happens. Generally, it happens with adults. To my knowledge, it's never occurred with an adopted child, but it does happen.
Yep. Now, Linda Robeck, so you have taken this to a new level. You have a group called SOS for the Children?
Yes, for the Children SOS. What happened was when this ban was put into place in February of 2004, there were over 2,000 families basically in Europe, Israel, and the United States, Canada, who were left with their adoptions in limbo, but most importantly, these children were left in limbo. And so naively, we all thought that, okay, we'll all get together. And if I can just back up, like you, I also belong to a listserv that even after my adoption, I had stayed on this listserv because you can get a lot of advice from, you know, parents who are out there who are going through some of the same experiences or similar experiences you're going through with your child. And so many of us were incensed and wanted to support these particular parents because we all know what it's like to wait for a child. One of the things that's seldom discussed, but I'm sure it was true for you too, Nicole, is the day that you find out that there is a child for you and you receive that child's photo or video or even just the printed information about the child. It's just as if you're
that's
having
your child.
A biological child.
Exactly. That's your
that
sonogram, basically.
Your child. Exactly.
And so now there are all these families who are waiting, and they're not able to bring their children home.
Right. So we thought the best thing to do, you know, in our naivete was, okay, we're all going to go to Washington, D.C. and do a protest demonstration, and we'll sit down with the Romanian embassy.
Right. Linda, you know what? Hold on, because I've got to take a break here. I'm up against the clock. We'll come back and get all the information on how For the Children SOS was born and how people can get in contact with you if they want to get involved. And then we'll move on with my adoption group. All right, it's Nicole Sandler here on Air America. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
That's Lucy Kaplansky, a song about called The Red Thread, which is, well, known very well throughout the adoption world. We're still speaking with Linda Robeck. She's back to wrap things up. We were talking before the break. Your experience adopting your daughter, Laura, from Romania led you to advocate on behalf of all the kids who were basically stuck in country when they shut it down for adoptions. And you started an organization called For the Children SOS. So I want you to give out the information on how people can get in touch with you.
Okay. Right now we're setting up a website, so it's best that they contact me at my personal email address. It's L Robeck, R-O-B-A-K, and then the number 1, at yahoo.com. And I also encourage anyone out there to either join the Congressional Coalition on Adoption. They can go to their website. They can call their congressman and make sure that their congressman or woman is a member of the Congressional Coalition on Adoption. And also, they can call the Romanian embassy. We are making progress. Vice President Biden was recently in Romania. This was a subject on his agenda that was addressed. We've gotten great support from this administration. And there is hope for these children. But it's 6 years later, and as we all know, you know, 6 years is a very long time in the life of a child.
Yes, it is. It's a long time in anyone's life, especially a child who's stuck in an orphanage. And the conditions in the orphanages in Romania are not great. So Linda Roback, thank you. And if people miss that, they can get in touch with me. I will forward your information on to anybody who's interested. Thank you so much, Nicole. It was a pleasure meeting you, and we will talk again soon.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
Okay, take care. All right. Now, when I started my adoption process, it was right around May of 1999, which was when my daughter was born. And as I mentioned, I had gone on these listservs, and when I finally picked my agency, I thought I did such a good job of choosing which agency to go with. I had gotten packets from at least a dozen of them. I had had phone consultations with them. And I found this little agency based out of Wyoming and Utah. They were in Wyoming and Utah. And they seemed to be in it for the right reasons, seemed to be. Their fees were low. They seemed like good people. And I had heard good reviews on them. So I signed up with this agency called Focus on Children. And then throughout the course of assembling my dossier, they examine every inch of your life that you've got to get in writing, get everything notarized, and then another procedure called apostil, which is basically notarizing the notary for international purposes. During that whole process of putting all this dossier together and being on these listservs, I found other people who were also using the same agency, Focus on Children. And one by one, we contacted each other and formed our own little email list. And it started out very, very primitive. We'd have, an email with all the names in the line, and we'd just copy each other on it until eventually we formed a Yahoo group. And to this day, it's still there. First person I want to bring on is Arnett Schultz. So if we can click on line 3 there, and let me say hello to Arnett. Arnett, you there?
Yes. Good evening, Nicole.
Hi there. Oh, it's good to talk to you. Arnett, I think you're one of the first people I really connected with, and our timelines were very similar in our adoptions.
Yes, they are, because our paperwork was filed in Russia, so we were told, in May of 99. And our daughters are only a few days apart in age as well.
That's right. And our adoptions were a few days apart, too. I think you brought Olivia home. When was your I don't
well,
know if you...
by the time we finally got home, it was October 11th of 2000.
Okay, so you were a couple of months ahead of me. Mm-hmm. Now, you wound up, when I first signed with Focus on Children, I was going to adopt from Russia. And you actually signed with them, I guess, before I did, because I had just started the process in May of 99. And by the time I got all my paperwork and in and everything, I think it was around October. And so I was a little bit behind you in the process. You wound up getting your referral of your daughter from Vladivostok.
That's correct, which is on the Pacific Ocean, three-quarters of the way around the world from Chicago.
Yeah. And so tell us what the process was like, when how long you waited and what happened when you finally got your referral.
Well, the only thing constant in international adoption is change, and from what I see on the list, that's no different today and maybe even tougher, as hard as it seemed 10 years ago, waiting for the phone to ring every day. But the process at the time was supposed to be fairly straightforward from Russia. Russia and China were then, and I think still are, two of the largest countries for intra-country adoptions into the United States. And we were not eligible because of my husband's age at the time. He was too young. To adopt from China, and we were drawn to Russia for other reasons, although not heritage reasons. So we were told, and we talked to a bunch of agencies like you, got information from a lot, attended some information sessions, advertisement sessions, whatever you want to call them, with several agencies in the Chicago area as well, and like you, thought we found a gem in the little agency that could focus on children. So we filed all the paperwork. We had had a lot of the home study and the state-level things. Illinois requires licensing as a foster family through the state, even for inter-country adoption.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And at the time was the only state that did so. I don't know the current situation, but they still do require that. So we had done all of that ahead of actually picking the international placing agency. So that probably took about 6 or 7 months to get that done. And then we filed. And at the time, we were being told by the agency we chose, as well, Focus, as well as pretty much everything we were hearing, was 6 to 9 months
right.
From the time your paperwork was filed till the time you were home. And it would be one trip of a week to 10 days, maybe a little longer, because Vladivostok is so very far from Moscow, 10 hours by air, and that we would, you know, make one trip to the country, but it was, you know, a 2 week or less trip out of the U.S., which, mm-hmm. again, is very... Two working professionals trying to arrange leave and time is very important. So we were expecting that, and it was September, and it was October, it was December, it was mm-hmm. YUK, and everything shut down.
Exactly. And during this time, I mean, we were on our little list, and we were all, like, waiting and waiting for our referrals. Now, during this time, I had been moved around. First, they told me Vladivostok, and then they said, well, no, you know, and during this time, Y2K, you mentioned, and then Vladimir Putin was elected president, who one of the first things he did was shut down the country to adoptions, right? And then they put in new requirements that agencies get accredited over there, and that started a whole new level of bureaucracy on top of everything else. I kept getting moved from region to region, but this whole time you stayed in Vladivostok.
Well, we before the shutdown, we finally got our referral.
Okay.
11 months after filing our paperwork.
Wow.
And I remember walking out of a physician's office that specializes in reviewing these rather cryptic medical biographies that you sometimes receive on the children. And having sat down and discussed it with my husband, and we decided we would accept the referral for this little child who was 11 months old, and calling up the agency and being told, well, they just shut everything down and we don't have any idea what's going to happen. And
which is sort of what Linda was just talking about, except there are families who've accepted referrals from these children in Romania, and it's been 6 years now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the time, they said it'll probably be 3 months, and it seemed like eternity, but it really was 3 months before we started receiving news again, and that things would proceed. And we had our hearts set on Russia. At that time, we had a young lady from Russia living with us. We are a 10-time host family for international high school exchange students, and we were hosting Russia that year to get to know more about the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt like, almost like, I guess, you know, emotionally, the impact of a miscarriage or something. Because
right.
we, you know, so we stuck with it more out of fear of, you know, if we move to another country, then you go to the back of the waiting list for that country. And, you know, it seemed like, also your paperwork in the U.S. Has a time limit. For inter-country adoption, and at that time it was 18 months, and here we were already 11 months into that, and if we had, you know, had to wait longer than another 6 or 7 months, it would all expire, and we'd have to start all over again. So it's not an easy process.
No, it is not.
Nor for the faint of heart.
No.
But it's certainly a good test of patience and emotions for the whole parenting experience, I think.
Right. You got that right. And so you got over there. You brought Olivia home. And she's now a happy, healthy 10-year-old.
Yes. Going on 19.
Yes. I'm right there with you. Again, Olivia and Allison are just days apart, and I joke, she's 10 going on 30. And we got to meet a few times. The first time is a bunch of us in our group got together at Disneyland in California, a year or two after we got home. And your family and Allison and I met up at Disney World in California a few years back, Disney World in Florida a few years back. And this is a connection that these kids will always have and will always have. Yep. All right. Arnett Schultz is with us. I'm going to put you back on hold, Arnett. We got to take a break, and we're going to come back and speak to a couple of other members of our group, Catherine and Monica, who both had sort of different experiences with the same agency. It's our adoption special here on Air America Radio. November is National Adoption Month, and I'm Nicole Sandler, a very proud adoptive parent. And today happens to be our Forever Day. All right. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Someone falls to pieces, sleeping all alone. Someone...
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
I guess we are back. There's the music. All right. We are back. It's our adoption special, for lack of a better term. I'd like to do at least one show every November for National Adoption Month on the topic. And I figured tonight was a good night because it's the ninth anniversary of the day that I took my daughter out of the orphanage that she lived in for most of her first 18 months in Kazakhstan. And we've been together forever. Ever since. Joining me now, a couple other members of my adoption family, if you will. Catherine Turan lives in Austin, Texas, and Monica Clegg is in San Antonio. And, well, Catherine was in that original group of focus people who were waiting interminably for a referral. And Catherine, I guess you, like I, got caught up in the shutdown. We were told as our paperwork went to Russia, all of a sudden Putin was elected and he shut down everything. He shut down the country to adoption and we were left without referrals. Is that what they told you the delay was?
Oh, they told everybody a different story. And I think, you know, that was one of the stories. It's not, but it was always, it's not our fault.
Mm-hmm.
And even when other agencies were getting referrals, they were trickling in. They had slowed down, but they hadn't stopped, except for it seemed like our agency. And I think that's what became so frustrating in the beginning. And it was just a really long wait.
Yes, it was. Now, so you and your husband, Ron, decided, you know what, we're not waiting anymore. And you walked away from the $6,000 you had already given the agency and signed with another one, the bigger, the Frank Adoption.
Center, yeah, we did, and it was amazing. We didn't just walk away from the money. We walked away from 16 months of waiting.
Right.
We had just lost all confidence that they would, you know, follow through on what they had promised they could do for us, and we just lost all faith. And so we had to walk away. We had 2 months left on our approval that Arnett mentioned on the show about you have 18 months
mm-hmm.
where you're approved to adopt. We had 10 weeks left by the time we walked away. And we called up an agency, and Frank Adoption was one of the first four agencies to get that accreditation that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yes, we'll take you on as a client, and we're getting referrals in next week. And sure enough, they did. And we got the information on our daughter, said yes, traveled about 2 weeks later, and, I mean, we were home with our daughter with 3 weeks to spare on our expiration for our paperwork.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And your daughter, Anna, she's now 10, too, isn't she?
She just turned 10 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah, she's doing fantastic. She's just a pleasure to have as a child.
And then after you had her home for a couple of years, you had another little surprise, didn't you?
Yes, we did. I mean, I'm sure we took the adoption route that many families take, where you go through the infertility treatments and finally realize that you could spend a lot of money on a chance of having a child, or you could spend a lot of money on getting a child.
Mm-hmm.
And we chose, after our first couple of problems, we chose to go adoption. Gave up the fertility treatments, and after about 2 years with Anna home, we decided it was time to add to the brood and started talking about doing our paperwork for another adoption, and I turned up pregnant.
Isn't it amazing how those things happen?
It was, and you guys got to be the first to know because we told you on that trip to Disneyland.
That's right. And, yeah. You know, as I've told people about our focus group, is some of these people, I know you and Ron and Anna, I met that one time at Disneyland, but your family. And,
oh, you're my cyber sister.
Yeah, absolutely, and always will be. All right, let's bring Monica in. Now, Monica, I feel like I don't know Monica as well as I know a lot of the other members of our group. And Monica, I don't think we've ever met in person, have we?
No, we didn't make it to that Disneyland trip that everybody else went on.
No.
But, you know, you've always had a near and dear place in my heart because you are actually the one who took the video referral
yes.
that we got of our son because
See,
he was adopted from the same orphanage.
I haven't met you in person, but I have met your son. As
yes,
we were leaving the orphanage, I was getting Allison dressed to go, and the woman from the agency, Galea, who was wonderful, said, "Oh, before you go, can you shoot some video of some of the children here?" And there was this little boy who just took my heart. He was just so precious, and he came up and he gave me the biggest hug, and I shot the video. And when we got back and I realized you had gotten the referral of this little boy, I was so thrilled. And he was such a precious little boy. So I've met Garrett, although not since he's been home with you. And
right.
how's he doing now?
He's wonderful. He's 11 now, so he has just flourished and grown and is just an absolute blessing.
And so he was adopted from Kazakhstan, and you have just the one little boy.
Yes. Actually, when we went over there, we thought we were bringing home two children. We mm-hmm. also had a referral for a little girl that was at the orphanage in Taldykurgan.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, there was, again, just like Catherine said, I heard so many stories. You know, one story was that a relative had shown up to claim her. Another story
it's always
was
something.
A different orphanage offered more. I mean, a different agency offered more
mm-hmm.
money. I mean, I don't know what happened exactly.
Well, but I
we
think we
brought
we,
home the one.
Yes, and we have the children I think we're meant to have.
Oh,
Monica, Catherine, Arnett, thank you so much. We need to take a break here. We're going to come back on the other side with our friend Elizabeth Munsler, who adopted a little girl from Ukraine, a little boy from Ukraine. And then a second adoption from Samoa, which didn't go quite as smoothly. We'll be back. Don't go away.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And welcome back to round two. It is Nicole Sandler here with you on Air America Radio on this Tuesday night, November 24th, and yes, it is a very special day for me. Tonight, we are dealing with the topic of adoption for a couple of reasons. First of all, November is National Adoption Month, and I try to do something every year in November to let people know that adoption is an option, and a really good one at that. It's not easy, as you're hearing tonight. But it is certainly worth all the heartache and all the problems you go through to get through it. November 24th, 9 years ago today, I took my daughter Allison out of the orphanage from which she lived in for most of her 18 months. And so we refer to this day as our forever day. It was 9 years ago yesterday that I stood in a courtroom in this little village in Kazakhstan, trying to explain to the judge, who didn't understand a word that I said, why he should allow me to be her mother. And it was the best thing I ever did. So I've told bits and pieces of my story, and I'll continue throughout the night. And by the way, if you go to the Nicole Sandler Show page at airamerica.com, you'll see the video that I produced of our story. It's in four pieces, and it gives you a little more of an idea of what the process was like and the joy that comes from it. But as you'll hear now, it's not always so easy. So in the last hour, we spoke to some of my friends, Catherine and Arnett and Monica, and heard how we waited for referrals. Now, depending on which country, if you go the international adoption route, each country has a different procedure that they go through. And with Russia and Kazakhstan, the two countries that the four of us adopted from, the way it worked at that time, and things have changed since then, it's constantly changing, we would get a referral. You would get information on the child sent to you by your agency. Usually there were pictures, sometimes a video, always some kind of very scary medical report that you would then send usually to a doctor who specializes in inter-country adoptions, who would then translate and interpret the medical report you got. Well, another country that our agency worked in is Ukraine. And the way Ukraine worked was they didn't give referrals. You would go over there and you'd go to the orphanage and you'd meet the children and I guess wait till you fell in love. We'll talk right now to Elizabeth Munsler, another friend from our group. And Elizabeth adopted her son Ryan from Ukraine in October of 2000. Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having us tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you all for doing this. This is really special. So how did the process work? When you went to Ukraine, you were taken to an orphanage?
Actually, you go to the adoption center, which is in the capital of Ukraine, in Kyiv, and you sit in front of a very stern woman. I think it's changed since then, and there's a man in that spot now, but she had kind of a reputation among international circles, Mrs. Kunko, and she kind of quizzed you as to why you wanted to adopt. And, you know, similarly to what everyone else had gone through with their home study, we had in our home study the type of child that we were looking for. And we were pretty open. We did want to get a boy first because we had kind of been told it was easier to get a boy. There is a faster referral.
Yes, that is the truth. I mean, for people who are interested, for some reason, it seems the majority of people who adopt want little girls. And it is easier to and faster to get a boy.
Yes.
Me being a single woman, I always pictured myself with a daughter. I wouldn't know what to do with a little boy. So I always knew that I wanted a little girl. But anyway, so.
Well, we hope to get both. And I had always wanted a bigger brother. I was an only child. And so I always wanted an older brother. So we decided we would try to go for the boy first. And so we got there and we knew in our home study it said, you know, a boy under the age of 3. And that was pretty much, you know, all we were looking at. And they say, in you know, that they don't have children picked out for you, but obviously your paperwork is over there for at least several weeks before you arrive. So I think that they do pretty much have, you know, some people matched with children.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
They brought in a little picture and gave it to us. And, you know, with going to Ukraine and not having that referral picture, you know, to think about for months and to kind of look at, you know, it was a shock at the time to just look at it and say, is this Ryan? You know, is this him? And so we got a brief medical at that point that was translated by our agency workers over in country. And then we got in a van and drove 16 hours to the region to meet him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, and that was it? You knew when you met him that this was your son?
I think a lot of it you just kind of have to go on faith. I mean, my husband and I had talked a lot about it because we had done a lot of research in, you know, about Ukraine in general and heard stories of people, you know, not being happy when they met the children and they have to go back to the adoption center and get another referral and then go back to a different region. And we had pretty much decided that unless something just really drastically stood out for us, that, you know, we were going to accept the first referral that we got, that we felt that that was the child we were supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, were introduced to him, and it was a very interesting experience. He really hadn't had much to do with men, and so he was very scared of my husband, and he was very, very tiny. I mean, he was 26 months old at the time,
mm-hmm.
but he was wearing 9-month-old clothes, and those fell off of him, you know.
Wow.
I mean, he was walking and everything, but he was just this little teeny tiny little guy, and very quiet, you know, very wary of what was going on. And so it was a very interesting experience. We visited him at the orphanage for a full week, a little bit over a week, actually, before we actually went to court. And did the same thing you did, talked to a judge that couldn't understand us.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having to stay in Ukraine. It is a little bit different than Russia and some other countries. And we were in country for 5 weeks total.
Wow.
Our trip was 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go to Warsaw, actually, to do some of the immigration paperwork because the embassy in Kyiv is not able to do that. So we were in Ukraine for pretty much 4 weeks and then went to Warsaw for a couple of days and then headed home.
And how's Ryan doing today?
He is wonderful. You know, to have been so tiny at the time, he, you know, by the time his third birthday came around, which was about 10 months later, he was completely caught up in terms of pretty much most of his development and then also certainly his size. And now he's one of the tallest kids in his class.
Isn't that funny? You know, Allison, same thing. She was so tiny. When I adopted her, she was 18 months old and weighed 18 pounds.
Yes.
She was so tiny and so skinny with the distended stomach, the whole thing.
Yes.
And she was 18 months. By the time she was 2 years old, she was totally caught up. And now she's in like the 95th percentile for height. She's tall and thin and gorgeous.
Yeah.
When I tell people how tiny she was, they don't believe me.
I know. It's hard. It is hard to believe. And then we look back at those pictures and it's just amazing, you know, to see how resilient they are. And that's what I would encourage people too is, you know, you hear a lot of stories. Oh, these kids are malnourished. And, oh, there's so many problems. And there are. You know, Ryan had several parasites that we had to deal with when he came home.
I remember those stories.
Medicine and, you know, and food and lots of love and,
yep.
and lots of work with professionals that are here to help did wonders for us. So, you know, these kids really are very resilient and can overcome quite a lot.
Right.
Such a young, you know,
yes,
heart.
Yes, they can. Now, Elizabeth Munsler is with us, one of my focus family. So your adoption and your experience with our agency went pretty smoothly for the first adoption.
It did. We also got caught up in that Russian quagmire there. Our paperwork actually landed in Russia the week that President Putin shut it down. And so we were way, you know, farther on the list than what you guys were. And so we waited around for about a month before we made the decision to switch over to Ukraine.
I see.
Had to redo the paperwork. But most of it was very similar. So it was a lot easier the second time around. Got the paperwork done in about a month, sent it off, and 4 months later we were in Ukraine. So
okay.
It went, when we actually made that decision, it went very fast.
I got you. Now, Elizabeth, hold on the line because I got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about this adoption went well, and a few years later, you decided you wanted to bring your little girl home, and you decided to use the same agency, Focus on Children, and this time go to Samoa, and things took a terrible turn. We'll talk about that when we return. Don't go
Nicole
away.
Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Feel. Although I have traveled far,
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we're back with Elizabeth Munsler, who is another friend of mine, one of my adoption family. And we just talked about her successful adoption of her son Ryan from Ukraine. And so, Elizabeth, a few years later, you decided to do it again and get your little girl. And this
yep.
time you used the same agency, Focus on Children, who had started a program in Samoa.
Yes.
And yes. So and as some people might have actually heard about this story because our agency, who a lot of us had problems with, but never, ever dreamt that they would have done anything terribly wrong, well, proved that anything is possible, I guess.
that's definitely true. We adopted our daughter from Samoa about 6.5 years ago now, and it is a very different process in Samoa as it is, you know, from country to country. The adoptions are processed before you actually get over there. So you're actually the parents of a child before you ever really get to meet them in person, which is a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
But we had decided to, you know, obviously to go with the same agency. This was a relatively new program for them at that time. They had been there about 18 months. And we could not go back to Ukraine for 5 weeks.
Right.
You know, with our sons, you know, we just could not handle that again. So we thought this would be a great alternative, and we're open to it. The children were not in an institutionalized setting. They were supposedly in a foster home. And so we felt that that was even an even better situation for us.
Right.
So we went and got her, came back, and almost immediately just knew that there was something up. We'd had some kind of odd situations while we were in Samoa itself, and but you know, you're kind of told stay. You know, your facilitator's there to help you, and things do happen in other countries that are very different than the U.S. So you have to trust those people,
right?
And so we did, and but she had some issues when she came back.
You're talking behavioral issues.
Behavioral issues, yes, and they progressively got worse, and. You know, long story short, we did end up seeing a psychologist who basically said that she had attachment disorder, which is typical in some cases of kids, older kids especially, that had been institutionalized for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't really understand why she, you know, had such a diagnosis, but it was a difficult time for all of us. And about almost 2 years to the day, actually, of her coming home, we got a call from the State Department. In the Department of Justice, who came to our home 2 days later and sat down at our kitchen table and basically told us that the agency was being accused of fraudulently taking these children from their birth parents.
Ugh.
That the birth parents had never actually, in some cases, and this was the case in our case, never actually signed off on the adoptions. The birth parents were told that this was an educational program, that the kids would go over to the U.S., be educated. Their rich American parents would take care of their birth families while they were over in the U.S., and then once they were 18, they would be going back to Samoa to support their families.
Unbelievable.
And that was obviously not the case,
right.
You know, in terms of what we perceived the situation to be. We were told that they were orphans and that they had been abandoned and you know, all the stories that you hear. And so to get that news was a pretty defining moment. And then obviously realizing that, you know, she was 20 months old when we adopted her, but that's a huge, very important time in a child's attachment. And she had never been in a foster home. She had never, you know, been abused or all the things that we were told that had happened to her. She was just basically taken from a home where she was loved and cared for, and one day never brought back. And so the trauma of that did cause some attachment of problems, but also was also diagnosed as post-traumatic stress as well.
This is so, so heartbreaking. Now, to fast forward to where we are today,
yes.
The people that did my adoption, I mean, Scott Banks and his wife Karen, who were in charge of the Samoa program, have been indicted and found guilty on 135 counts?
Well, actually, no. They were actually indicted almost 2 years ago of 135 felony counts, including, you know, alien smuggling, money laundering, visa fraud, all of that fun stuff. But actually, last February, they actually worked out a plea deal with the Justice Department to plea deal out to 5 misdemeanors.
Oh.
The agency itself was, you know, indicted, and there was, a felony charge with that. But certainly with none of the individuals, you know, it all went to misdemeanors. And then they also were given the edict that they never work in adoption again, which, you know, is some comfort, I guess. But certainly from our perspective, we wanted something more. The families were very mixed, I will say that, on you know, the adoptive parent side as to what they wanted to happen. And so, you know, I think that the Justice Department did a really good job in the long run. They you know, covered this for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Between New Zealand and Samoa.
Yep.
And the U.S. And you know, it wasn't the outcome that I particularly wanted.
Right. Right. You know, Elizabeth, hold on just a moment because I've got to take a break here. We're going to come back on the other side and talk about the where we are now and the 48-hour special that's coming up. We'll be back with more. Don't go away.
They mean so much. I just don't think that it's right. I've seen so many ships sailing. Just a head back out.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back, and I kept Elizabeth Munsler on to finish up the story. We had heard about our agency, which basically, for whatever reason, they felt compelled to take these children in Samoa from their parents and not tell them the truth and present them to American adoptive families as orphans. Elizabeth, you and your husband knew that, that Christine obviously had emotional issues, and when you realized what happened, what had happened, that she was taken away from her family, you got her the help she needed. And how's she doing today?
She's actually doing very well. You know, as with any child that's had experienced any kind of trauma early on in their life, as they develop, they're going to re-experience that trauma in different ways as they developmentally grow. And, you know, that's definitely the case in her case. But certainly she, you know, the truth does work miracles. And in knowing what happened to her, she has an incredible understanding of what's happened and has been able to work through a lot that of the issues that she had, even at such a young age, at eight. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And so, you know, it will always be an issue for her and for all of these kids that were taken. But, you know, it's up to us as their parents to work to try to help them build that foundation so that they can make the decisions as they go forward on how they want to handle things. We
right.
are in touch with the birth parents.
Mm-hmm.
The State Department did help facilitate that initially, and we have continued that. And so, and we plan to, you know, we consider this an open adoption now. It's not ever been an option to send her back for us. You know, she's been here for 6.5 years. She does not remember Samoa. And so, you know, that would devastate her probably more
mm-hmm.
than anything at this point. But certainly, you know, we are in contact with the birth parents and are doing everything we can to help them be a part of her life.
That's great. That's great. And now I know there's been a lot of media attention to this story, and there's going
yes.
to be a 48 hours program.
A 48 hour special that will air in just a little bit over 2 weeks on Saturday, December 12th, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and whatever time 48 hours usually comes
mm-hmm.
on that Saturday night in your time zone, it will be on. It's a 1 hour special that will chronicle three families who have been impacted by this tragedy. And so we are one of those families. We'll talk about, you know, the issues that we've gone through, and there are two other families that will also be profiled in that.
Okay.
The correspondents, Maureen Maher, and she's adopted herself, and so there's several people on the 48-hour staff who have adopted children, so this has really hit them hard, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think they're going to do a great job.
Great. All right. And I'll remind everyone when it comes on.
Okay, great.
Elizabeth, thanks for doing this and telling the story. It's really important that people see, you know, all sides of what happens when, you know, in the adoption story. You know, there's so many different stories. And unfortunately,
sure.
they're not all as easy and happy as others. But, you know, it, hopefully most of them work out very well in the end.
Well, they do. And, you know, I would encourage anyone to adopt. Even in spite of everything that we've gone through and my daughter's gone through, you know, it is truly a blessing.
Yes, it is. All right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk soon. Now, I'm going to turn to another friend, and this is the last of the group that is going to be joining me tonight, but I know there's as many of us who are out there listening, too, from our original focus group. Sandy Hellman is Sandy, what town are you living in now?
Reno.
You're in Reno.
Yeah.
And, I remember meeting you before I even before I had signed on with Focus. I was still doing my paperwork, and they had a picnic out in Utah, in Salt Lake City, and I flew in to go, and there was you and your husband, Todd, and you had a newborn baby with you, and I remember thinking, why are they here? They've got a newborn baby with them. What could they possibly be doing here? But while you were waiting for a referral, you had gotten a call from someone you knew that a birth mother was looking to place a child?
Yeah, a friend of a friend, and it was her daughter that was pregnant, and she was in the Army, living in Georgia, and found out late in the game that she was pregnant and decided she wanted to place her child for adoption. And so they contacted us and asked if we were interested, and we had had a couple other situations like that, and they'd all fallen through, and so we went ahead and gave her a call and talked to her, and 3 weeks later, I was out there for the birth of the baby.
Wow. Now, you also had a foster daughter who you finalized her adoption in 2000 when she was 12 years old, and you also had a foster group of three little boys, a sibling group.
Well, we had been foster parents for many years while we were trying to get pregnant. Totally a different road. They weren't crossing at all. But then when our foster daughter had been with us for several years, when they terminated parental rights and decided to look for an adoptive family for her, because we were strictly foster parents. We were not looking to adopt. But then at that point, she had been part of our family so long, we couldn't imagine life without her. And so when that came up, we said, well, wait a minute, we'd like to, adopt mm-hmm. her. And so that was in the works. And then we decided to adopt a couple of kids from Russia, two boys from Russia, and we thought that would be perfect, three kids, and we'd be done. We submitted all our paperwork for Russia. We're waiting, and that's when we got the call on the new baby. And then we were still waiting, and during the summer, the social workers called us and asked us if we could have a sibling group of three boys for the weekend.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh.
For the weekend.
For
right.
the weekend.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And thus, Keegan, Luke, and Chase
Correct.
Now
became
eventually your three foster sons turned sons.
Because exactly.
Their
yes.
adoptions were finalized in 2005. So you had these three boys staying with you your weekend that didn't end, I guess,
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And but you still kept on going with these, trying to adopt these two boys from Russia.
Well, and the three boys that were placed with us, they were strictly foster kids,
uh-huh.
and we were working on reunification with their birth family, and so that continued on, and we had no idea that was going to wind up to be a permanent situation, and so one of the reasons we decided to adopt two children from Russia is we thought it would be a neat experience for them to be able to share their heritage and all
uh-huh.
of that, and so when we eventually did get there and decided, we found our two children, and it was a two-trip system. I don't know.
Things changed in Russia, you'd go over there to accept the referral and go to court, and then you had to come back on a second trip to bring them home.
Correct.
Right.
Right. So we went over there and met our two kids, and then when we came home, at this point the foster boys had been with us almost a year. And there was no sign of them leaving anytime soon. But again, it was still very temporary. I mean, we were definitely actively working towards that reunification. And then our two-trip system kind of got messed up in there. It took much longer than we had originally anticipated.
Right. So then you went back for the second trip to bring the first the two boys home, and you met Todd.
A third boy, yeah.
So you met this little boy who was 13 months old. When you went there to bring the first two boys home, you met this little boy and said, this is our son, too?
Yeah. He was sharing a crib with Seth.
Oh.
And we spent, every day at the orphanage while we were there. And so when we went to about the second week, I think we were there. We were there for 3 weeks. And we went to go see Seth, and Ty was in the same crib, and he reached his arms up and, Mama, and I looked at my husband, and I said, no, there's no way, and so that counted as our first trip to bring him home.
And then you went back a couple of months later and...
We did. We went back a couple of months later and were able to bring him home in December of 2001.
So now here we are. In February of 2000, you had one child. By December of 2001, you had eight children. Boys under 7 years old.
Yes, seven under seven and our daughter, yes.
Unbelievable. And such a heartwarming, wonderful story. Until, I hope you don't mind talking about this.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Okay. Was it a couple of years later? Your husband, Todd, was a helicopter paramedic.
Correct, a flight paramedic, uh-huh.
And I'll never forget the night, and I'm sure, obviously, you'll never forget the night, but a message came in to our little email family that said, Todd's helicopter is missing. There's no word.
Right.
And what happened was it was a snowy winter night, and he was out on a rescue, and the helicopter crashed?
They were transporting a baby from the rural Nevada area into Reno to a bigger hospital.
Mm. And Todd died.
Right. The whole crew and the baby and the baby's mama.
Sandy, I'm... And you know, I mean, this shows the closeness of this group. Again, some of us had never met. You and I met, I think, twice.
Mm-hmm.
We met you guys at SeaWorld one time with Nikki
right.
and the boys and Allison when I was down in San Diego. I hope we were there for you. We were. I know we had meals sent to your home. We did whatever we could. We each took a holiday to buy gifts and things. We did everything we could, and I don't know how. You are the strongest woman I know. I don't know how you got through it, but you did.
And I still don't know. I mean, that first year was a fog. I mean, I still had three kids in preschool. I had all these little rugrats. Maybe even the first 2 years was a fog.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I had to get out of bed every morning, and I knew those kids needed me. And so I had a huge support system from you guys to my small community. I had friends. I had family. And they kind of just made life continue on and made life happen.
And you did. And now here we are, I don't know how many years later, and I know one of the biggest smiles I ever got on my face was an email from you saying that you were in love, and, oh, by the way, you're pregnant.
Yep.
And so now there is a ninth.
Now there's a ninth.
An eight-month-old
little miracle baby.
Incredible. Absolutely unbelievable. I almost hate to ask the question because your new husband is also having some challenges.
He was diagnosed with stage 4 esophageal cancer.
Mm.
He goes in tomorrow for his 12th round of chemotherapy, and he's done his radiation. Because it's stage 4 and it's spread, that he's most likely not a candidate for surgery, although we're still not crossing that off the list. And we're traveling to MD Anderson Cancer Center in Texas, where his primary oncologist is there, and then he does his treatments here locally. But we'll be traveling there again in mid-December to see where we're at with the treatments and what the next course is. But we're definitely not giving up hope.
Well, that's great. And if anybody can get through this, I know it's you. Sandy, you are the strongest woman I know, and I love you dearly. And you
You're going to make me cry. Stop that.
I know. Well, it's making me cry, too. But I adore you, and I mean you're so strong, and I admire you so much, and you know that if there's ever anything I can do for you, I'm here for you, right?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, I mean your story's a wonderful one, and go give all those kids a great big hug for me.
I will do that.
Okay. All right. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Nicole.
All right. Thank you. So now you've met my a good part of my focus family here, and as I wipe the tears from my eyes because Sandy just blows my mind, we're going to take a break, and I'll come back and wrap things up for our very special adoption program. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back. So you met some of my focus family, my adoption family, my very favorite people. One thing I didn't get into with them, but about half of the people in my group have made contact with the birth families. You heard Catherine, who lives in Austin, Texas. They made contact with Anna's biological family. She says it's been a positive relationship for everyone. Same thing with Arnett. They had contact with Olivia's birth family. And I know Sandy also contacted the birth family of a couple of her boys and in Russia. And although they haven't had much contact, the contact was made. As for my story with Allison, you know, I really believe she is my daughter. She was meant to be my child. She is so like me that it's scary sometimes. Now, Allison, what I learned from her background is she was left on the doorstep of a private home in Kazakhstan. And the people, I guess, when they opened the door, found her in the description in the translation was a household sack with two blankets, a bottle of formula, a little cap, and a diaper. And so the best I can figure is I know she was loved. They estimated she was about a month old. They said she showed signs of prematurity. I would love to find her birth mother, but obviously she was a foundling. She was left on a doorstep, and there is no information. Although I do have the address of the home where she was left, and I really think that one day we'll go back and visit, and we'll go back to the orphanage. Now, as I got the paperwork translated, what we noticed was there was a gap, about a five-month gap, when she was taken out of this orphanage and placed in another orphanage. And what the doctor told me is that the orphanage she was moved to was a home for mentally retarded children. Apparently, Allison had got sick and had a high fever and had a seizure, right? And what they did was they moved her to this home for mentally retarded children. There was another child who my agency was assigned to place. They'd already found a family for her, and this child was also sent to this home, and they knew she didn't belong there. So they sent a neurologist there to get her and bring her back. And this neurologist saw Allison and said, this child doesn't belong there, which they do not do in Kazakhstan or in Russia. Usually one doctor does not reverse another doctor's diagnosis, but thank God this doctor did and brought her back to the other orphanage where she was when I got her about 6 months later. Well, the doctor I had who looked over her referral spoke Russian. And so she was able to call this neurologist and talk to her, who said exactly that she thought she was mistakenly placed there. And then Allison had picked up some of the mannerisms from these children. She was around them for 5 months. And it was honestly pretty scary. When I got there, there were some behaviors that scared the hell out of me. But I just had to trust that this was meant to be. And my daughter is smart, feisty, tough. She makes my life hell sometimes, but I can't imagine life without her. You know, somebody called earlier and said, did Nicole feel pressured into adopting, like she had to have a child? No, I always knew I wanted to be a mother. It wasn't something I wanted to do alone. I didn't want to get pregnant just for the sake of getting pregnant. And when there wasn't a man in my life at the time that I wanted to have a child with, I always said that I was going to go and adopt and do it myself. And I really think things happen for a reason. And Allison couldn't be any more my child if I had given birth to her myself. She is my child through and through. And adopting her, though it was difficult, and though parenting is difficult, I know it's the best thing I've ever done. So, you know, if you're wanting to bring a child into your life, think about adoption, because you heard from a lot of people today who, you know, our lives have changed for the better because these children are in them. Thank you for listening. I'm going to go look at pictures. Check out the Nicole Sandler Show page at airamerica.com. I've got a video posted up there. And I will talk to you tomorrow night. Thanks for sticking around tonight. Bye-bye.